You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Tim McMaster talking Baltimore Orioles baseball with Orioles broadcaster Jim Hunter. And Jim, the O's really out of the division race, probably, you know, looking like they're not heading to the postseason, but a fun series right now as far as the Battle of the Beltway. It gives the O's a chance to kind of play spoiler in the National League, which is something we've not really seen in baseball before, but they get to take on the Nationals and help maybe eliminate Washington from that NL East race. Kind of neat late in the season.
Well, yeah, I guess, Tim, you could look at it like that, although the Orioles are actually taking the opposite approach. They're even though it looks bleak because there are four teams ahead of them for that second wild card spot, they're only four down in the loss column to the Astros. And what they're looking at is if we can win as many games as possible, and what they're trying to do is run the table. Whether they're going to be able to do that remains to be seen. They still think mathematically, until somebody tells them you're eliminated, that they're going to try to stay relevant in the race. And at the same time, it happens to be that they're playing the Nationals, who are in an even more dire position, because the only way they can get at the postseason is if they pass the Mets. The way the Cubs and the Pirates have played in the NL Central, the wild card is definitely going to come out of that division, both of them. So the Nats really have to catch the Mets. And the Nats had to be pretty frustrated last night because the Orioles really played a sloppy game. They made three errors. There were two other plays that weren't made that could have been called errors and weren't. But the Nats only got three hits, and the Orioles won 4-1. And you looked up at the scoreboard to see that the Braves were dominating the Mets and the Nationals could have gained a game. What they're trying to do is get within three by the end of next week because they finish with three in New York. So if the Orioles were spoilers, I guess from the Nats standpoint, they could look at that. But from the Orioles standpoint, they're looking at it as we need as many wins as we can. And if it works out, we're in, fine. And if not, fine. But we're going to keep playing hard with our real team and our real lineup until we're eliminated.
I know overall you like to play those division games in September and battle it out for whatever you can get. But if you have to play interleague games, which obviously with the way baseball's aligned now you do, this is a pretty neat way to do it, to have a Beltway series. And we saw in New York last weekend a Subway series in September.
Yeah, the Nationals and the Orioles rivalry is growing certainly more so than when the Nationals first came here from Montreal. And in the early years of the rivalry, both these teams were bad, I mean, just to be honest about it. And it's only since 2012 that they've been relevant in their respective divisions. The only thing about the rivalry, and I wish the MLB schedule makers would take a closer look at this, with the natural rivalries, and we play the Nationals every year because they are our natural rival. Their ballpark is only 35 miles away from our ballpark. To me, this really should have been played on a weekend in August. The first go-round was a weekend in July at Camden Yards, the final series before the All-Star break, and they drew 137,000 fans to Camden Yards. Now, here we are in late September. School is back in session, and it was scheduled for a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series, all-night games. So you're competing with parents not wanting to have their kids out on a school night. People have to work. Another coincidence, the Pope is in town here, so on the news they're telling you, look, if you don't have to be anywhere, stay home, so people are reluctant to go out. I think this would have had a little bit more more zing to it, if you will, if this was an August weekend series instead of in September. But I do agree with you, Tim. I mean, there has to be an interleague game all the way to the end of the year. I think the Angels drew the short straw. I think they play in Arizona the last 3 days of the season. And that's really tough because the American League team loses its DH when they go on the road in the interleague. But it is a growing rivalry, and I think the reason for that is that both these teams are very, very good. They're very well run by their front offices, and they each have an owner that is very competitive. So it really is a nice budding rivalry. But again, I just wish the schedule makers would look at these rival games and try to ensure that they're played in the summer on weekends so more people can attend, because I can guarantee you a lot of people would have come here from Baltimore to see the O's play at Nats Park because they love showing their orange on the road, especially when it's the rivalry game.
Yeah, blasting that O over the national anthem on the road, always funny. You mentioned the win on Tuesday night. Ubaldo Jimenez picked up his 100th career win. He's 11-9 now. Has he been in 2015 more what the Orioles thought they were going to get when they signed him in before 2014? Obviously, a tough year last season, but it seems like he's kind of figured it out a little bit in Baltimore this year.
I was having a hard time hearing you. Were you talking about Ubaldo?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a special pitcher in the sense that he's 6'5", he has long arms, he's all legs and arms coming towards the plate, and he just has a real challenge of repeating his delivery. And as a result, his fastball command is not as consistent as most major league pitchers would want it to be and need to be effective. But when he does throw the fastball for strikes and commands it well, his off-speed pitches are devastating. His splitter last night against the Nats, they couldn't touch it. And Brian Onora had the plate last night, and he was a pitcher's umpire last night. So Ubaldo was able to take advantage of that a little bit. And he actually went away from his normal repertoire. He threw 75% fastballs last night, which is more than he usually throws, because his command was pretty good last night. Now, he's always going to be a high pitch count guy. He survived five walks. None of the five walks came around the score. And because of the high pitch count, 110 pitches, he lasted only six innings. But one of the things that the Orioles did, and this shows you how Dan Duquette really understands scouting and teaching, the Orioles hired Ramon Martinez, Pedro's brother, to be a roving pitching instructor in our system. And his number one student is Ubaldo. Now, they also happen to be very good friends from the Dominican Republic. Ubaldo knows Pedro and Ramon very well, and he looks up to them being younger than Pedro and Ramon. And Ramon has done a tremendous job of simplifying all of Ubaldo's mechanics. You remember, Ramon was a tall pitcher. Well, he's still tall. He just doesn't pitch anymore. But he did a really good job of speaking to him in his native language, speaking to him as a mentor, if you will, and impressing upon him that, yeah, he had a bad year last year. Ubaldo will tell you, he'd be the first one to tell you, yeah, he was not very good. But the talent is still there. We saw what he did in Cleveland the final September of 2013, which was one of the reasons the Orioles were inspired to go after him, because he pitched so well. His stuff is electric, but again, it all comes down to you have to throw strikes with your fastball, because if you don't, they're not going to respect the other pitches. So Ramon Martinez really was the one that got him to the point now where he's more consistent. And in fairness, it actually went back to last September when he wasn't in the rotation anymore. Dave Wallace, our pitching coach, and Dom Chidi, our bullpen coach, who's kind of the assistant pitching coach, they began to work with Ubaldo in side sessions on his mechanics, which then led to Ramon taking over in the spring and really kind of simplifying everything and, you know, getting the rough edges removed. And now what we're seeing is the finished product. I mean, it's kind of ironic. Here's a guy last year that lost his spot in the rotation and was left off the roster for the ALCS. And now this year, it's been a down year for the Orioles starting rotation, but this year Ubaldo leads the team and wins. So it just shows you that if you have the ability and you don't mind working, and you have to be a tad humble because that's what this game is all about, and he certainly was humble, and he took the advice of all those who tried to help him, and now he's put it all back together. And, you know, last night was a big night for him. You know, he won his 100th game, and he's only the 11th pitcher from the Dominican Republic to do that, and two guys on that list ahead of him are Pedro and Ramon. So for him to do that, I mean, the Orioles were thrilled for him. They gave him a little bit of a party in the clubhouse last night when they came off the field. He had more than several shaving cream pies, and when he came out to do the post game interview, he smelled very nice because it was menthol shaving cream. So he really has done the work, and that's really what it's all about. I mean, anyone who's on a major league roster has talent. There are some that are stars, there are some that are average, there are some that struggle, but it's all about doing the work, and he's done the work.
Jim, another pitcher the Orioles would love to get on track late in the season, even if it's just a start or two, is Miguel Gonzalez. I know he's throwing a simulated game on Wednesday. How important is it for a guy who really struggled in the second half to get back out there in a couple of starts here in the last week of the season, just to give him something heading into the offseason?
Well, I think it is important, and I say that because he has said that. No pitcher wants to be injured, and he apparently was pitching with some shoulder discomfort that then led to elbow discomfort. And whenever a pitcher tries to favor one body part through a delivery, it tends to lead to another injury cropping up, and that's what happened with Miguel. And he's such a competitive guy. He's had to fight for everything to get to this point in his career. You know, he had Tommy John surgery as a young pitcher in the Boston system, and eventually was released by the Red Sox, and the Orioles found him pitching for Mexico in the Caribbean World Series, signed him to a minor league contract for the 2012 season. In fact, that season, he was in the minor league spring training camp, never once stepped on the major league field, and when the season began, he was signed to Double-A. That's how far out of the mindset that he was. But it is important for him to get back. The simulated game is today, and if he gets through that, they're hoping to give him a start next week on the homestand, the final week. There's four games with Toronto and then three with the Yankees. And they're hoping if they could space it out, if all goes well, that he'll be able to get two starts on that homestand so he can go into the offseason feeling really good about the fact that he overcame the injury and he got back on the mound and pitched. Miguel's a very, very good pitcher. He really is. And there had to be something wrong because, as you said, he just wasn't pitching well. He just wasn't the same guy. And, you know, again, with the injuries, it's very tough to pitch when you're not healthy. And I think maybe this is a lesson for him that in the future, if you do have a little injury or something crops up, then maybe you should be honest about it, because it's better to go on the DL and step aside for a little bit than try to pitch when you're not well. But it's very important for him, and everybody's hopeful today. He's going to be out there this afternoon at Nats Park pitching the sim game. And Buck said last night they're hoping he could go almost six innings, which is a bit ambitious. But the reason for that is they want to stretch him out so he can pitch next week. So hopefully it'll go well and he'll get on the mound. So going into the offseason, he'll be of that mindset that, okay, I did get back, I pitched well, and now I'm ready to go into my offseason program to get ready for next year.
Jim, you said it, the Orioles still battling to get that wild card spot if they can, but they had a nice run at the Double-A level this season. The Bowie Bay Sox won the Eastern League title for the first time in 23 years, their 23-year history. They actually trailed Reading 2-1 in the final. I don't know how much you know about what happened from there, but Reading may have inspired them with an offer of buying their champagne.
I don't think there's doubt about that. Reading was so confident they were going to win. And that team is very good, the Reading team. All of the prospects, or most of them, that they got in all the trades they made, in particular when they sent Cole Hamels to Texas, most of the players who were top prospects were put on that team. And they were put on that team for a reason. It was already good, and it got better once they got that personnel in place, including the pitching. Buck mentioned that Gary Kendall, the manager of Bowie, told him that the Reading staff became the best staff in the league because of the players they acquired. But the one mistake they made is, you know, Jim Palmer tells a story all the time that when he was in A-ball in South Dakota, Cal Ripken Sr. was his manager, and it was the middle of the ninth, and the Orioles had a big lead, and the bat boys started packing the bats away. And Cal Ripken Sr. scolded him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, the game's almost over, and we're up by a lot." He goes, you leave those bats alone. Until there's 27 outs, you keep playing." Well, what Reading did was they insulted the Bay Sox by calling over to their clubhouse to try to buy the celebratory champagne and beer for their celebration of their title. And the Bay Sox were looking at this like, "Well, wait a minute, you still have to win a game. And if we have a chance to win two in a row, we'll use that champagne." So I don't know how much it helped on the field. I mean, they pitched well and they hit well in the final two games. But Gary Kendall went out of his way to mention that in his post-game interviews about, you know, you just don't do that. You know, you find a store down the street, you go out and buy whatever you need to buy, and if you don't use it, you bring it home and you distribute it as presents. You just don't insult the team by saying, "Look, we're on the verge of eliminating you and we're going to win the title, and we want to buy your champagne from you." It just wasn't a smart thing to do. But that Bowie team had some pretty good prospects on it, and I'm really anxious to see next year Trey Mancini, who the Orioles drafted a couple of years ago out of Notre Dame. He started the year at Frederick in A-ball and did well, and then he got promoted to Bowie, and he won the Eastern League batting championship. And it was interesting what they did. He didn't have enough at-bats to qualify, so they added an 0-for-29 to his total, and even with that, he still won the batting title. That's how well he hit. He's a right-handed bat with some pop, and He's a first baseman, and we all know the Orioles' first baseman is a free agent after this year, so who knows what might happen. But it was really nice to see. And as you mentioned, anytime you win a title for the first time, it's good for the entire organization because a lot goes into that. And a little side story there, Caleb Joseph, who's one of the Orioles' catchers, his brother Corbin was on that team and had a really good series. He's a second baseman, and he hit really well in the postseason for Bowie. So it was nice to see for that, and you know, just nice for the organization. They had some really good pitchers go through there. You know, as you know, Tim, there's a lot of turnover in the minor leagues. I mean, the Bowie closer is in Baltimore's bullpen, Michael Givens. So you know, you have guys do well, and the major league team takes them because that's what the minor leagues is all about. It's to develop guys to come up here. But that was a really nice run, and it was a nice run for Norfolk as well. You know, they got eliminated in the first round to Columbus, who eventually won the International League championship. And Ron Johnson went through 57 players down there this year. 25 of those played for both Baltimore and Norfolk. So a good year in the minor leagues. And, again, they're all not going to make it. But sometimes you develop guys to trade. And they certainly have more prospects now than they had when Dan Duquette took over a few years ago.
Yes, and regardless of whether or not the whole Champagne story had any effect on the field, that's the type of story that we love in baseball, and that's one of the great stories. And I'm sure in Bowie, that story will go on for years and years. Well, this has been Orioles Extras on MLB.com. Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.